Welcome back. You're listening to Voices from the Front Lines. Next, we'd like to welcome Greg Achille to the show. Greg is a senior political community organizer for SEIU Local 1000 and a member of Community Call to Action and Accountability, a coalition of unions, clergy, community groups fighting against police brutality in South Los Angeles. CCAA has been leading the efforts in pushing for an extension of the Civil Rights Consent Decree with the LA Police Department, which was signed in 2000 between the city and the U.S. Department of Justice to address the long history of brutality and corruption at the LAPD. And earlier today, the courts ruled in favor of a 3-year extension, and an extension that would also cover 100% of the provisions inside the consent decree, which is a huge victory. Welcome to the show, Keeley.
Good afternoon, and thank you. And the other goal of the Community Call to Action and Accountability is not only to hold the police accountable for their attitudes, behavior, and actions, but also to stop the violence in and among ourselves. So we have a twofold goal.
That's great. Greg, why don't we get into this question around the extension? I know that the Community Call for Action and Accountability has been fighting, I would say, last year, right, around this conversation around an extension. And I would say, in looking, as you know, both me and Tammy are organizers with the Bus Riders Union. We ourselves also have a consent decree with the Los Angeles MTA, and it's been obviously an uphill battle to make this into a real consent decree that's enforceable and where the MTA actually is held accountable to be able to meet the years of civil rights violations against bus riders. Obviously, for us, it's been an uphill battle where we've had at least a lot of people in the streets enforcing this consent decree. How has that differed from the LAPD consent decree, given that that was the Department of Justice was the one that essentially imposed the consent decree? How now do you see this as an important tool in your own fight?
Well, first of all, we learned some valuable lessons from your struggle, as is the case in the struggle overall, that you look and see the successes and what people have had to do to make these consent decrees real. And we actually looked at Pittsburgh, where they also had a consent decree that was in place for a number of years. So we looked at some of the lessons. And one of the things we found out, that without an outside pair of eyes and without an outside continuous push, the consent decree, like anything else, is no better than the paper it's written on. And so learning from those experiences, we started, first of all, making the consent decree public, as you all did, and that's one of the first lessons. Usually what happens with these consent decrees is that they're between lawyers, you know, and judges, and the public doesn't have a real say or a real level of participation. So that's the first thing that we wanted to do and learn the lessons from you all to keep it, to make it public, to talk about it, to educate people about it, and to take a position on it. So those were the things that we did. And for us, this is a part of it. We want it 5 years and 100% compliant. So 3 years is better than the two, and certainly we're still expecting the 100% compliance. So in many ways, we learned from the lessons of other struggles around consent decrees. We did the education and the action stuff that we needed to do to make this a
Greg, are you moving around or are you in one site?
Because right,
you're coming in and out a little bit.
I'll sit down.
There we go.
Okay. All right. But anyway, so that's learning from the lessons, applying those lessons, doing the education, the community education that's needed, and then trying to create public pressure.
So why don't you help the listeners understand the consent decree? What, you know, like, for us, we know that for us it meant low fares, reduced overcrowding, and creating new service. What does it mean for the LAPD consent decree? I know there's generally some conversations around creating software that keeps it more accountable, more tighter records. What are some of the aspects of the consent decree that people need to understand that are the important tools that people have that as a disposal for themselves?
Well, I think the three key ones are, one is that this consent decree was imposed by the federal government. That is, this was not something that the city came to of its own. And the city has had a 40-year pattern of abuse, outcry, and then so-called reform. And then it's been the same thing. And if you remember, it was the Christopher Commission, it was this commission, and it was that commission. And shortly after the outcry, it went back to just like it was. And so we felt that the only thing that would change that would be a powerful watchdog that would hold them accountable. So that's the first thing. The second thing was there's two elements that we were quite concerned about. One is the tracking of abusive police, people who have had X number of complaints filed against them, people who have been brought up on a number of charges, I mean on a number of questionable use of force charges, and is to see if there was a pattern. And if there is, then we can say, all right, that person may not need to be on the streets. Mm-hmm. Secondly, are we being treated differently? Are Latinos and African Americans being treated differently when we are stopped, and are we stopped more often than other people? And there's some evidence that even the police department has that that's the case. Then as the statistics and our gut tells us, then here what's being done about it. And so those are the two areas that we felt. And the third one was the use of force. That in our community, there was you use force first, and then there was was there a problem? And I guess the most graphic and tragic example is the Devin Brown shooting,
mm-hmm.
Which is where the use of force was applied first, and then come to find out that the police officer was not in any real threat and outside of the policy. So those three areas: use of force, racial profiling, and tracking problem officers. And without that, unless we can have that, then our belief is that this police force will go back to business as usual. They have a paramilitary racist, this is a paramilitary racist institution, and that will guide what they do. Unless there is a larger force, more powerful force, that can intervene.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that has even gotten the reforms that have come about so far is because of the consent decree.
Mm. Well, Greg, I know it was an interesting debate that I was following in the newspapers because, a la classic most, racist institutions, they're always talking about creating new ways to interpret how they're in compliance. So I had been reading that the chief and a lot of the folks in, sort of the LAPD public relations were saying, hey, we're 95% in compliance with the consent decree, which is exactly what the MTA says. We're like in 99% in compliance with the consent decree. And yet we say, hey, they're 99%, in non-compliance with the consent decree. Let's talk about, I know there was a little bit of mismatch between certain forces in the city that were saying, hey, we should enforce this entirely, which is the victory that was won today. And there was other forces who were saying, let's just comply with aspects that have not so-called been complied with. How have you guys been relating to those? I know that not just the community call for action, but an accountability was pretty instrumental in this victory, but so was the ACLU, so was the Asian Pacific Legal Center, and the SCLC, right?
Yes, and certainly ACLU has mm-hmm. been, I think, the tip of the spear. They've done the legal research. They've helped us understand it. They've helped them. We've had a number of town hall meetings here where they've come out and helped people understand what this issue is, because it can be seen as a complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
But they helped us and other people understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So together, what certainly we've tried to do, while the ACLU, SCLC, and the Asian Pacific Legal Services are the primary interveners.
Mm-hmm.
We've supported them. We've done public issues, and we had a press conference and did some other stuff. So
mm-hmm.
to outline that, so part of that's the public pressure.
Mm-hmm.
We want 100% compliance
mm-hmm.
from A to Z. If this had been an institution that maybe some level of trust, was there, then you say, okay, concentrate on what you haven't completed yet. But
mm-hmm.
this is an institution that has demonstrated time and time again that given the opportunity, they will go right back to doing what they did. Part of the reason why we asked for 5 years is because over a decade, 10 years,
mm-hmm.
maybe you can establish different patterns and get different people in, but not in five, certainly
mm-hmm.
not in five.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, if you just put another 2 more years on that, the minute the consent decree was up, we believe they go right back to doing what they were doing before. So part of the reason why we are demanding 100% compliance is because 99.5% just won't do.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg, I mean, I have a real deep question, and I'm hoping that you can answer it quickly in a minute because I know we have to wrap up here. Which is, I think, you know, I think this is an important victory, and particularly for us in the Bus Riders Union, we're going to have to keep a strong eye on it. Is the question that at the same time that we're having this victory, the mayor's still pushing for 1,000 more police, you know, through this new sales tax that he's trying to push forward. How does that pose that as a dilemma for ourselves? On one hand, we're being able to hold the city more accountable, but yet, public officials are moving quickly on a very aggressive, recruitment of more of these paramilitary forces inside our communities.
Well, I think that for us and many people, we run into this duality. And in this community, we want to live in a safe, secure environment. And some people believe that, that's the role and responsibility of the LAPD. But on the other hand, they've demonstrated that they can't be trusted. So more of the same means that, we only make matters worse. If, though, you bring on another, and I think the mayor's calling for another 650 police, and the police chief, if, though, you bring them on and there is a strong contempt decree order in place and we can track errant behavior, we can struggle against and eliminate racial profiling, and we can develop new policies, as is emerging, around the use of force, then we have a chance of saying that, yes, the police that are here, because part of our duality is that we're struggling to stop the violence in our community, and we're struggling to stop the violence to our community. So we have got to look at both. There's a need for police, not a paramilitary occupying force, but police who understand how that their role and responsibility is to serve the residents in the area that they patrol, not to occupy and dominate them. And those are the things that we're going to have to struggle with. So it doesn't matter whether there's 10 police or 10,000. Mm-hmm. If the attitude is the same, then as occupiers and enforcers and oppressors, then, the numbers are non-consequential. What's consequential is the attitude, actions, and behavior.
Well, Greg, what's a place where they can get a hold of the Community Call to Action Accountability, website?
We meet every Tuesday at 7 p.m. at Bethel AME Church, 7900 Western, and our website is www.cc2aa. And it has a list of the activities that we're involved in. And by the way, this was our number one goal for this year, was to...
Great victory.
Well, luckily this judge, I think, had some sense, and the public pressure that was raised, the combination of the two, I think, have created this victory for us.
Well, thank you, Akili. This was Gregory Akili from Community Call to Action Accountability. We'll be right back with Benjamin Ramos of the Pro Libertad Freedom Campaign.